You go to a new place, you're traveling somewhere, you've never been there before, and you are just open. You're in awe. That is true presence, okay? That is someone who's in the present moment. Mindfulness is about being in the present moment, being in the here and now with equanimity.
Welcome to Your Wealth and Beyond, where Andrew Rafel, founder of Baintree Wealth Advisors, talks through all things financial understanding, personal growth, and more. Here we inspire you to turn your dreams into actions because your financial journey should be just as exciting as your destination.
And welcome back to another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. This is actually episode 83, and I am pleased to introduce all of you to a good friend and a mentor and somebody that I've looked up to over the course of the last few years in regards to helping, for me as a business owner and just life, helping to keep the chaos at bay. And so everybody, welcome Elizabeth Winkler. Elizabeth is a licensed marriage and family therapist and certified meditation teacher with a practice serving people all over the globe. Her transformational heart-mind healing therapy transcends traditional talk therapy and has helped thousands of clients ease their suffering and make positive, powerful shifts in their lives. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Happy to be here.
So, you know, I think times are always chaotic, you know, chaos. Especially if you're growing a family, growing a business, and a lot of the listeners and the viewers, they are type A go-getters and business owners and just have a lot on their plate. So I thought it'd be great today to sit with you and learn your wisdom and your passion in helping individuals clear out the chaos, focus on growth, and really live the life that they desire and dream. So
yes, beautiful.
Lots of good stuff we're going to dig into. Before we jump in, for listeners that don't know you, your passion has been helping people, guiding people, and meditation, mindfulness, all of this has been a huge part of your life. When did you know that this was your guiding force? This was what you were put on this globe to do. When did you know that?
Well, I always knew that I wanted to work with individuals and kind of help people at a young age. But then in college, I actually found psychology. I thought I was going to do more studying people like sociology and things like that. And then I took my first psychology course at Tulane. And when I opened my introductory psychology book, I was like, this is me on the page, like the way that I think, very deep thinker into philosophy and also just how we can, as you said, we talk about the chaos, the storms of our lives, whether that's financial or in your family or health or whatever it may be, we all have these storms in our lives. And we can, through mindfulness and meditation especially, become the eye of the storm. And that is the still point at the center. And when we can really harness that energy, then we can create in a magnificent way. And it's something that I have, over time, over 20 years, found different ways to really harness that energy and become more masterful as a creator. We're all creators. We are creative beings. People might not think of themselves as creative, but we are. We all are creators. We're creating all the time, but sometimes we're creating very mindlessly. And so just allowing the craziness of the day, just we're reacting to it rather than responding with intention or what we value. And so that's kind of a long answer to your first question.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So they don't teach in high school or even for, unless you're studying psychology in college, they don't teach this mindfulness, this living with the intention. So let's talk high level first on that mindfulness versus people, you know, doing things kind of ad hoc and not really understanding what their actions are and what it's leading towards. So what does that mean for those that have never really gone down this path of mindfulness?
So mindfulness is very simple. It's about being in the here and now. You can think of it like, okay, you maybe have heard of a beginner's mind. Maybe, maybe not. A beginner's mind is like being, think of when you go out and you see the sunset and you're just struck still. Or you go outside and you're like, see the moon. It's like a beautiful moment. Or You could also think of it like you go to a new place, you're traveling somewhere, you've never been there before, and you are just open. You're in awe. That is true presence, okay? That is someone who's in the present moment. Mindfulness is about being in the present moment, being in the here and now with equanimity. Equanimity, to define that, is an evenness of mind, is what many would say. It's not having really preference, like this is good or bad. It is what it is, sort of thing. So mindfulness is being able to be in the here and now with equanimity. And we experience this. People think, oh, I'm not mindful. People are experiencing it all the time. They're allowing everything to come and go and to be with what is. Often we are being mindful, like as I said, when we look at the sunset or we see the moon or whatever it may be. So, but you can train your mind to be in that state more easily. And meditation is a very helpful tool to help you be able to let go of the distractions that the mind creates. And that's really the biggest troublemaker, so to speak, is our own mind.
And meditation has been a big piece of your daily practice. And I know for a lot of your teachings, that's a huge part of helping somebody center and focusing on the here and now. A lot of people, even me included, have always looked and said, I know meditation can be highly effective, right? I know it. I know people who do it and they love it. What is the biggest reason that people don't do it? Are they fearful? Is it the unknowing?
I think that we make a lot of excuses, and I think that that's not even us. I think that that's the mind. So just to give you a little information about this troublemaker in our mind, maybe you've noticed there's a voice in your head. If you're like, what voice? That voice that just said, what voice? That's the mind. So we have 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. Okay. This is how I teach this. 60 to 80,000 thoughts. That's like rain. Think of rain moving through your mind. So it's just moving through your mind. When you're totally present, you're just allowing that to move through your mind, right? You're not being distracted. But then sometimes a thought goes through your mind that you pay a lot of attention to. So it's not a drop of water. So where attention goes, energy flows. So if I attend to a thought like, oh, I never heard back from that person, and I start to pay attention to that thought, my attention grows that thought from a drop of water to a thought stream. And if I keep attending to it, it goes into a river of thinking. And if I keep attending to it, it becomes an ocean of thinking. So if it's a worried thought, then it becomes anxiety, and then it becomes panic, and maybe a panic attack. Most people are really struggling with stress and anxiety on our planet right now. So this is the fastest track. I call mindfulness the bullet train to freedom. And so all of my little tools are like bullet train tools, which is a fast track tool, to be able to shift from that ocean of panic back to a drop of water. And we don't go from an ocean to a drop. It takes time to unwind that conditioning that we tend, because we all have things that we attend to. You and I are conditioned very differently. And so if we're talking about business, there's obviously a lot of worries that arise in business and our own personal lives, and we're attending to those. Well, that's a distraction. That's not allowing you to be present and creative with what you need to be doing, which is here and now. The only thing that's happening is the here and now. All of these thoughts are distracting you and taking you out of the present moment. And so when you understand that this mind that is normal, people might be like, the mind is great. The mind is great for lots of things, a lot of things. You and I wouldn't be on this meeting right now if we didn't use our mind to schedule and all of that sort of thing. Of course, that's practical. What I'm talking about is the fear-based mind, which is most of that thinking that's going through our head. And especially when there's emotion involved and reactivity, you do not want to listen to it. So meditation helps us get more aware of that. And I think to go back to your question, why aren't people meditating? Because they're listening to their mind that's saying, I don't have time for that. I don't know how to meditate. I'm bad at meditating. People have all of these ideas. Well, the thing is, if you're meditating and you're having a lot of distracting thoughts, that's part of meditating. That's part of the teaching. People think that in meditation, I'm supposed to have a quiet mind, an empty mind. Good luck. You can't. 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. You can't have that. Like, it's just you noticing that you're distracted is part of like you strengthening the muscle of awareness. Okay. So think of it like working out. You're working out, you're lifting weights. You're not going to pick up 100-pound weight day one. You have to work with 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 15 pounds. So working your way to creating a practice and creating a habit of a practice. And so I can give you lots of tips on how to do that, but just not having this expectation, I think, is a huge thing. Like that I'm supposed to have a certain experience. If you are experience thoughts, if you experience stillness, or even if you fall asleep, and you said all of those things could happen during meditation, you've meditated. It's fine. Don't have too much of an expectation. Just setting aside 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you can build up, or even 1 minute of just being with your breath. There's so many ways and there's so many teachers, and it can be enjoyable, I should say, because some people are going to find it not enjoyable, but you can find teachers that work for you that you can just listen to. You put your AirPods in and you can do it laying down in bed. Like you can wake up and meditate. That's what I do. I just wake up and I meditate first thing in the morning.
Is that best practice to try to set this muscle memory of doing it in the morning, right when you wake up?
So my mentor, David G, he's a wonderful meditation teacher, and he has an acronym, RPM, which is Rise, P, Meditate. Okay. Rise, P, Meditate. So what that means is you get up. The only thing you can do before your meditation is go to the bathroom, because we don't want you to be like distracted by that. But so it is the best thing. Like if you meditate, they've done a lot of science research that has shown that how you start your day dictates the trajectory of your day. So if the first thing, think of your brain like clay, right? When you're waking up, you know, like soft clay, and whatever you put into that brain first is going to have an effect on how you feel at the end of your day. So if I'm looking at the news or I'm looking at my email, that's usually pretty stressful. We don't know what we're going to get. So if I can give myself 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, back your wake up time up. Like I'll give myself a half hour before I have to actually start my day. And then maybe I didn't get a good night's sleep. So maybe I'll hit snooze once before. So then I have 20. That's how I do it personally. And then I meditate, and I usually do it. I sit up in my bed, or I even can do it lie down, but that has changed my life. I love meditating in the morning. And then meditating in the afternoon is also a really important factor. Maybe between 4 and 6 is what most people recommend. And that's more of a letting go practice of all of the stress that you've taken on that day. Think of it like you're kind of cleansing your energy, if that makes any sense. Like you've taken on your client stress or whatever happened that day. And for you to kind of release that, cleanse that, it's almost like taking a shower. That's another effective tool, especially if people have issues with sleep, because it's going to release the stress of the day. So they have different benefits.
Yeah. And I think, and that may just grabbing your phone and looking at emails and news, which so many people do, it's only going to cause trepidation. And it's such a hard habit to break in today's world. But overall, if we set the intention for that day by doing the meditation and also including in that, maybe that gratitude in your life, what are you grateful for? And then setting that intention can transfix you into the supercharge of feeling great. Because I know for me, I try to not look at the phone. And when I do, and early in the morning, you're seeing that email that came in at night, and or thinking about, oh, I got these 3 appointments today, and how am I going to make this work? And I've got this meeting over here. And it's just going to cause the brain to have an anxiety moment. And then you're setting that entire day where you're going to now come into the office, the employees are going to see it, they're going to feel it, and that energy is just off. So you don't have to be the best at it, is basically what you're stating. You have to just do it. And whether it's a, like I imagine for you, you may probably do it on your own, but some of the technology that's available, like using Calm, or even for you, have a great program on Insight Timer that just helps to find the person that you're comfortable with, right? And just go through some type of guided, and it doesn't have to be perfection.
Yeah. And I actually do listen to Insight. I go on Insight Timer every morning.
Do you listen to yourself?
I have, for sure. Yeah. I have, because I have created practices that I really enjoy. Like I have a practice that will transmute your pain into power. And it's really effective. It's over 20 years of experience creating a process that will shift something that's really challenging, like the storm, into peace. So yeah, I do that. And so, but I have a lot of teachers I like to listen to. And sometimes, but the way I look at it, the reason I like listening to guided meditation now is it's like, talk about type A. I've been type A my whole life. Meditation has really been able to calm that. Okay. And that power that a type A person has of that strong desire of getting things done, well, you can use that in your meditation practice and in your mindfulness practice to really help you harness your energy more effectively. So when I talk to a lot of like corporate people or, you know, my clients who are type A minded, I'm always appealing to their desire to be more efficient. If you want to be more efficient and more effective in your business, you need to be meditating every day, because it's absolutely harnessing energy in the most effective way. We are wasting our energy through attending to our minds. And so it's not the most effective way to be. And if you're just allowing the news of the day or the emails that come in or that don't come in to be dictating your life, rather than you starting your day with intention, with meditation, which really keeps you focused, it's a different way of living. So I like to listen to guided because it's, for me, I have a pretty busy day. And so for me, it's like someone else is carrying me into my day. I don't have to do anything. I'm like sitting back, relaxing, meditating, and then I start my day. For me, it's kind of it's nurturing to start my day.
Yeah. And especially somebody that's never done it before, having somebody to guide you through. And below in the show notes, we'll have a link to your on Insight Timer. Some wonderful, wonderful practices that the listeners can listen to, and very soothing. You've got a great way in helping and ultimately can be short. Okay. You don't have to sit there 30 minutes and completely, I think that's where people feel like it's got to be this way and I can't clear my head. And you know what? I'm just not going to do it. So there.
Right. And there's as many people on the planet as how many ways to meditate. Find what works for you. There's no should. So there was a therapist that said, stop shooting all over yourself. I eliminate that word from people's lives. If you're saying, I should meditate, let that go, because that's going to create guilt in your life. If you're saying should about anything in your life, let that go. That's not going to be helpful. It's going to put you in a victim energy. And I know we're talking to people who are really want to be efficient. And if you're shoulding, you're not going to be efficient. You're blocking your power. You're blocking your ability to be efficient and effective.
Another big piece for you is verbiage, or this saying, what you resist persists.
Yes.
And for a lot of us out there making tough decisions, the easy way can be, you know what, I'm just not going to do it today. I'm going to put it off, or I'm not going to have that tough conversation with a loved one about how I'm feeling. How does that relate to center and mindfulness, and what can we do to help start our day or to build a practice that lets us hit this head on?
Okay. So I would say for this, life is dictated on what you value. Okay. And so this might sound a little intense, but just trust me with this one. How do we get in touch with what we value? What I call your North Star, you know, which is guiding you through your life. Well, you could think of today as if, what if today was your last day? Hopefully it's not, but this is how I get people to get in touch with that. I say, okay, think you're on your deathbed. I know that sounds intense, but just go with me there. And if you were to reflect back on your life and think about the moments that mattered most, what did you value? What was the energy? People, when I say, what do you value most? People will say family, friends. I'm like, okay, that's great. I want you to go a little deeper. What is the energy exchange? Was it love? Was it peace? Was it forgiveness? Was it gratitude? Think of the moments in your life that matter. Like, people right now, close your eyes. Think about it. Think about if today were the last day, what would pop out? You can do this when you wake up in the morning and reflect on, what do I value most? This is how you get in touch with what you value, and it becomes your intention for the day. So I did this morning, and the energy that arose, I didn't know. I kind of asked the question, and it was love was what came in. Often it's peace or something else, but it was love. And so I want my life today to be with a vibration of love and connection, right? I value connection a lot, connecting deeply with people. And so when you can connect with that at the beginning of your day, you're going to be able to be a more effective, and you will inject that into the moment. And believe me, When you say, I want to live from a place of peace today, guess what life is going to bring you? A lot of chaos. And because that's the way it is, right? I mean, or if it's love, then there might be something really that upsets you. But it's like reminding myself, let me be peace. Let me be love. Let me be connecting, you know, and how can I come back to that within my own heart, within my own self? And it might be that you need to take a breath because there's like a fire of anger beginning or something, just calming that down so that you can be more present with what's actually happening in front of you.
And breath too is whether you're doing it right then and there, or you're about to go into a big meeting or do a big phone call. A lot of people don't really understand their breath and allow the breath to help them center, then focus on what's most important. How important is breath work, and what can we do, those that aren't doing it?
So, well, first of all, breath is your constant companion. So your breath is always with you. A lot of us have loss in our lives. We've lost important people in our lives. And I often say there is something that's always with you, and that's your breath. And so you can start to nurture a relationship with that, especially if you're facing grief, loss, sadness, anxiety, stress. And just even placing your hand on your heart and taking a breath is a huge thing. There's so many amazing breath practices. I have a practice on Insight Timer. I have many, but one called How to Connect to Your Inner Calm. And that's really about connecting to the ending of a breath. And it basically anchors you into presence very easily. I've done it with 5-year-olds and I've done it with 80-year-olds. And basically anyone can do it. So it's just following the movement of the breath. And that can be your morning practice. Your morning practice could be putting one hand on your heart, the center of your chest, and one on your belly, and just feeling that movement. It's always happening. And if you just sit with that, that is really nourishing to your nervous system, which if you're highly stressed, you need to nourish your nervous system and calm it down. There's ways to activate the vagus nerve, which also takes us out of fight or flight. So there's the physiological breath, which Andrew Huberman has talked about, which is like like that. There's other breath practices. You don't have to go take like a breath class. You know, I mean, it's very simple. You can do an extended exhale. So you breathe in for 4 seconds and extend the exhale by a beat, by a second. And that turns the vagus nerve on. So basically when the vagus nerve is activated, then you move out of fight or flight. If you're in fight or flight, you're not going to be affected. You're going to be in fear, right? So we want to get out of that so that we can be present and mindful and effective with how we're with our energy.
And that helps you get into that word of flow.
Absolutely.
And sometimes people, they don't really understand when they're in that flow, but they're the most creative or the most empathetic. They're the best versions of themselves. And sometimes people just accidentally get into it, right? And then they're like, well, how do I get back to that? I need to get back to flow. Well, it starts with breath. It starts with intentions. It starts with the mind. You can teach yourself to get into flow, right? It shouldn't just happen accidentally.
That's what this entire conversation is about how to be in flow. There's lots of words for flow. It's like being in the zone, being in the present moment. That's what we're talking about. That's why I say mindfulness is the bullet train to freedom, because it gets you in that space. Now, when you notice things and you're in a state of awe, like I said at the very beginning of our conversation, that's that same place. That's that flow state. So we absolutely can help ourselves. I think another thing we haven't touched on is mantra. So I have all these mantras that I've taught and put together over the years. And I have them on like little, I used to put them on like little lemons because I'm like, how do you make lemonade out of lemons? And I use mantra. So mon means mind, tra means vehicle. So it's a Sanskrit word, which is a vehicle for the mind to get us out of the mind. We're using the mind, actually, when we use a mantra to transcend the fear-based mind so that we can enter the zone where everything is actually occurring, right? And so I have a ton of mantras I use. I can handle this is a very effective one. When you're activated, you could be, let's say, in traffic or any kind of stressor arises. I can handle this. I can handle this. I can handle this. That's going to keep you present with what's happening here, like the anxiety starting to begin. And so I can handle this. I can handle this. That's going to keep you here, which we really want to stay anchored into the body. Okay. Your mind's going to say, I can't. You don't want to go with the mind. If you go with the mind, it's harder to get out of it. But many of us are already there. So for the mind, I'll give you a couple of my mantras. I'm fine with it, which the mind's never fine with anything. You're saying like the opposite thought because the mind is dualistic. So when the mind is really negative, I'm not fine with it, and you say I'm fine with it, it makes it dissolve. It makes it fall away. It collapses. It like neutralizes it. So a lot of mantras are just like saying the opposite or saying even I'm fine with it a little bit like more is I love it, which makes you laugh because you don't love it, but it makes you laugh because it's ridiculous. So I'll tell you a quick story about this. I used to work with this restaurateur here in Los Angeles, and I was teaching him this, and he had all these restaurants, and obviously your kitchen's the most important thing in a restaurant. And I was saying, if you walked into one of your kitchens in LA and there was a leak, I want you to say, I love that there's a leak. And he starts laughing and he's like, that's ridiculous. And I said, yes, it is, but you're laughing. I said, if you didn't say, I love it, you know where you would go? Into that thought of, they're going to close me down. I'm going to have to shut down everything. All, you know, all the catastrophizing and the worry and fear and anxiety and panic attack of the mind. I'm like, if you say, I love it, it makes it fall away. And then you get on the phone and you take care of action. And that's an example of what I'm talking about, of how we become in control of the mind by using a mantra like, I love it, I'm fine with it. And there's many more mantras. I have lists of them, but that's just an example of how you can use your mind to get in the driver's seat so that it's not running your life and keeping you stuck in patterns.
And would you recommend people writing these down and having them available so that they can see them?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Because you're going to forget. I sometimes write it on my wrist. Like, I'll write the word yes, because the mind is always no. That's what you resist, persist. Resistance is no. I can't handle it. No, 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 no. This, listen, terrible things happen. I'm not denying. And I'm not trying to deny what you're going through, but I'm trying to get you to get out of this, adding the fear on, additional fear and worry, anxiety to something that's already happening. The leak is in the kitchen, okay? We need to deal with it. But I want you to deal from this zone space of presence where you're going to be more effective and have access to your prefrontal cortex, which is the front part of the brain. When we're in fight or flight, we don't have any access to that, okay? We go into the amygdala, which is all fear. Okay. So we don't want to be operating from that level. You have different levels that you can live from. And most of the people listening to this are probably pretty successful and they're in the zone a lot, right? And so they're operating from that creative part of the brain. And so when you use these different strategies, you can operate from there more easily.
And then the other where people who maybe haven't trained themselves on what we're talking about here and feel that all the time, but then they come out of a yoga class and they feel finally at ease, at calm, and be able to take on the day. You know, they've kind of, in that case, just accidentally got into that flow because they got out of their mind. Or if somebody gets through a long run and they have those endorphins flowing, most of the time people are getting out of their own head. And so exercise is one way that people probably do that without even really understanding that they're doing it. But we don't always have to just say, oh, I've got to do this yoga class so that I could be in flow. You're saying we can teach ourselves to do that. And it starts with the consistency and setting the intention the right way.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because the reason exercise works is because you're in your body. So if you're in your mind, we're talking about mind as like the troublemaker here, right? The mind and the body, think of them like kind of separate, like in a sense. I mean, because the mind is a distraction. The body's always present. When I used to teach little kids, I'd be like, I'm talking about mindfulness. I'm like, okay, whose mind is here? Whose body's here? Okay. Maybe your mind and body, but sometimes our mind isn't here. We're here, we're thinking about something else, right? So the mind and the body being in the same place. Well, when you work out, you're very in your body. So that's why you feel present. That's the reason that exercise makes you feel present, because they're in their body. So another tool that doesn't take any training, you just do this. You anchor into the body. That's why where's the breath? It's in the body. That's why breath work works. That's why connecting to breath works. You can also connect to anywhere. Right now, you are sitting, I'm sitting. You can put your attention on your toe. You can put your attention on the chair. You can feel the sensation of your back against the chair. Anyone here, you're maybe driving, you can put your attention on your hand on the steering wheel. You can put your attention, your back, anywhere. You can use your body as an anchor at any moment in time. If you're in an argument with someone, if you're in a board meeting, whatever it is, use your body as an anchor. That will keep you present. People think that's going to distract them. It doesn't distract you. It keeps you present. So a very easy place for people to focus like that, maybe your focus, your ability to focus isn't that strong because you don't meditate. I meditate a lot, so I can shift my focus real easily, right? But anyone can really put their attention in their hands. This has been talked about a lot. And so you can feel the energy in your hands. If you right now, you're listening to me, when I work with couples and they're fighting a lot, I'll say, put your energy, your focus in your hands. And most people can connect to that. Are you able to connect with that in this moment? Yeah. I had a client, this is another little tidbit, had high anxiety. She came to me for her anxiety. And so I was teaching her this, and she kind of took it in another direction. She went, there was a place she'd always go to meetings, and she would get a lot of panic because it was like, I think, high up in a building, and she had fear of heights. And when she went into that space, she touched the table in front of her. And in her mind, she just said the word table. And her awareness all went to her hands on the table. And she said, I had no anxiety. Why? Because she wasn't in the mind. She wasn't lost in the thoughts. She was feeling the present moment through the table. So you can use that as an effective tool at any moment in time.
Have you noticed over the last 20 years, you know, being in practice, working with clients and business owners and couples, et cetera, but since, I mean, we keep hearing with technology now and the chaos of the 24/7 hubbub of the news and just always being constantly bombarded from all sides, have you noticed a shift in your practice of who you're working with? Has it gotten worse? You know, has it gotten worse over the last 20 years, especially since social media has come on board? What have you seen and what can we do to combat that?
I think, yes, especially since COVID, I think that the isolation people feel increased my business with like anxiety and fear, I think is very high. But it's why I spend so much time teaching about the mind, because this has been around forever, for thousands of years. Mantra has been around for thousands of years by these teachers who were in India, and you know, the wisdom of ancient teachings. That's why they had mantras, because they knew that the mind was the culprit. But yes, I do think that social media can be feeding these negative thought trains. You can look at your feed. Like if you're on Instagram, like look at your explore page. Whatever you're getting in your explore page is what you're attending to. You know, so it's like, and so is it a lot of meditation and mindfulness, or like what is it, a lot of fear-based news? And that's what you're attending to.
So I guess looking at my feed, it's all French bulldogs and road bikes. So I think I'm good. I think I'm good. No, but totally. Yeah. I think that's a great way to, like, anytime you take on a new client, it's like, let me see your search function in Instagram, because the algorithms know. It's definitely scary in that end. But yeah, I think from like, and even on your website, and we'll have a link to this as well, but you've got a great case study white paper, 7 steps to move you through anxiety and fear. And a lot of what we've been talking about the breathing and the grounding and the mindset, you list it all out there. And too many times we just, as type A's, we just like, you just keep hitting back on, you know, we're in our head, we're in our head, we're in our head. We are. And that helps you to become successful, because you do, from the standpoint of a successful person, most all of them are type A and they're in their own head, right? So it's a positive. It can be leveraged and harnessed the right way.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'll relate to it this way. A lot of people that are type A are perfectionists, and I related to that very much myself. But perfectionism is really being driven by fear and by a sense of not enoughness, which every single person on planet Earth has an energy of, it's not enough. It's not good enough. It's got to be better, 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 which means you're never satisfied. And if we go back to our conversation about the end of our life, we really want to have those satisfying moments. At the end of your life, you're not going to wish that you had, you're going to be talking about moments of connection. You're not going to be thinking about other things that we tend to be driven by when we're saying it's not enough. Okay. So it's whether you're in a place of fear or a place of presence. And so for the perfectionist that's listening and relates to that, you're being driven by fear. You're being driven by not enoughness. And most people think, yeah, it got me really far. I had this incredible, you know, it's like, I don't think you need to be driven by that anymore. You have a choice. That's another mantra. You have a choice. You're really good at getting things done. What about getting things done from a place of enjoyment, from a place of doing something for the world or your clients, or I don't know, like a deeper level? There's a deeper level you can move from, and you don't have to be always bashing yourself, because there's a lot of self-content and self-hate, in a sense, that drives perfectionism. And so I really try to get to the root of that so that we are happier people. Doesn't mean that you don't still have drive. You're just doing it from a different place.
And one of your mentors or teachers that you've looked up to, Michael Singer, let's talk a little bit about his work and how it's inspired you, and how those that are listening today that may not have seen his work, what can we take from that? Just some quick bullets on how he changed your life.
So he's changed everything I do. So back in 2015, I went and spent time with him for the first time. I've spent time with him a few times. He wrote a book called The Untethered Soul. I highly recommend to everyone listen, or actually, I recommend reading it rather than listening to it, but listen to his teachings. He has a lot available on YouTube. And anyway, so he is teaching everything we're talking about, that basically that the mind is the culprit, and that most of us are being run by our mind, and that there's all this energy in our heart that has been basically resisted and we have clung to, and we think that this is who we are and it's not who we are. And that all of the work is about releasing the mind, clearing the heart, so that you are present and living the life that you want to be living, and you can be highly creative and effective. And so he has that book. He has another book called The Surrender Experiment, which is his personal story of how he went through that. He was a highly successful businessman as well. So people don't necessarily know that about him. And he went through a lot of trials and tribulation, like all these crazy things happened to him in that book. So you get to listen to or read how he was able to say yes, which is something I write on my wrist often. Like, how do I stay in alignment with the flow of life? You want to be in the flow of life. You need to say yes to what's happening inside. People think that that means I'm not having boundaries. No, that's not what it means. It means that you're, I can handle this. All those mantras, I can handle this, I'm fine with it, all from the work I did with him. So he's the best teacher, I think, of all teachers about the mind. I think you can listen to a lot of teachers and still be working at the level of the fear-based mind. And he's like, don't listen to anything that that mind says, because it's all fear. Sometimes it's hoping, wanting. That's also fear. So just disguised as hope. So he is an incredible teacher, and I could go on and on about him, but that's what all of my work is about how to basically transmute energy inside of you, and how to make your fear into freedom, your pain into power. And that's all through really mindfulness.
And that's led to a lot of the workings that you've done, and you've worked with David G in the past, but now you guys have taken that work and a lot of the experiences you had and the trust you have with each other, and you've put together this beautiful podcast that just started, The Shadow and the Light. So let's walk through a little bit of the reasoning behind that, of you collaborating with David, and some of the basis that you're leading that podcast on, so those listeners who want to learn more can potentially then dig in and start listening as you get more episodes out on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it. So we've been working on this. It just kind of came together. I did my teacher training, my meditation teacher training with David G. And he was with Deepak for a long time. He was running the Chopra Center, and then he went on his own. And he and I are very aligned in the sense that we like to pull from lots of different teachers, ancient teachings to practical application. And our intention, we're very intentional with this work that we do together, was to be able to reach someone who has no desire to talk about ancient teachings to the person that's obsessed with that, and to express through our conversations, it's just live conversations that we're having on different topics, such as ego, anger, grief, loss, whatever it could be. It's all about the shadow and the light. So what is the shadow? The shadow is the part of you that is hidden, that you don't know. It could be what you're ashamed of. It could be what you are afraid of. but it's unconscious. You don't really know what your shadow is. And the light comes, I mean, there's the shadow itself and then there's the light. But the way for us to become a more evolved human being is to do our shadow work. If anyone's heard of shadow work, that's basically what I do, is like going towards your fear, going towards your pain, going toward what you resist. We talked about what you resist persists. So what I often say is like, think of the Hoover Dam. We all probably know what the Hoover Dam is. It holds a lot of energy behind it, right? And that's a wall of resistance. So what I want you to do is to start to turn towards that resistance wall. And when you can, that can soften. And all of that resisted energy becomes your light, becomes your power. And then you have abundant energy. That energy was being stored. And now it's being used to create whatever you want. That's available to all of us. But as a therapist, I can't open that door. I can tell you how to get there, Andrew, but I can't do it for you. Only you can do it. You have to turn towards the fear. You have to turn towards the pain. And I teach people how to do that. And that's, you know, what David G and I are doing. So all of our conversations are just finding different ways to express that. And tomorrow we release another podcast. Every Tuesday, we release another podcast. And hopefully it'll speak to people. It's available on all the platforms, the Shadow and the Light podcast.
I highly, highly recommend listeners jumping in and subscribing to it. It's been great. And doing it on a weekly basis for a podcast, that's, you guys are setting the intention straight. You know, you guys are holding each other accountable, because I think the average, and you guys are probably already shot, you know, and recorded close to 10, I'm sure, but the average podcaster lasts less than 10 episodes. So you guys are just, the passion I've seen in the first two episodes and some of the teachings on there, I think it's bringing the power of what you guys can do, which a lot of times it's on an individual basis, or you're doing it with a group of 20, but now you're getting it out to the masses. So awesome stuff there. That's going to be exciting. And I could see the excitement from you of being able to get these teachings out there and doing it where it's not just you doing it, but having that yin and yang with you and David, who do play well off each other.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, we've been getting some good feedback.
Yeah, and you guys made the opening song. Somebody did that for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, you asked how it all began, and it like began as a conversation. You know, we both want to reach as many people as we can, because we both have found tools that are effective to heal. I'm a heart healer. That's what I do. I help people heal their hearts. And he is a master meditation teacher, as well as many other things. So here we came together hoping to reach as many people as we can, right? And one of his meditation teachers, so he has a teacher training, and I have taught in the teacher training as a teacher. And there is a musician, Jamar Rogers. He was on The Voice. So I've done heart healing with Jamar and love Jamar. And obviously Jamar is a meditation teacher through David G. So one day I'm like, we're talking about our podcast. And I'm like, we need to have a song. You have to have an opening song. And he's like, let's ask Jamar. So we reach out to Jamar, and he wrote this incredible song. I mean, the lyrics are amazing. And, you know, every time I listen to it, so we play the whole song at the end, and I love listening to it. And I sing it. I mean, it's very catchy, but it's beautiful. So yeah, that came together really beautifully for us.
Yeah, definitely catchy. And it will make people listen to the end so they can get it all.
Yeah.
So great work there. Congratulations on putting pen to paper and getting things out there. But yeah, I mean, you just before we talked about that, you hit so right on in regards to that font, getting into the shadow. And if, you know, as a listener, if you think about you're dreading this difficult conversation, that whether it's a family member, you go back to your deathbed and you think about, why I didn't have that conversation with my parent, and I was afraid because of whatever the ego or whatever fear that we had in our own mind. But if listeners, we think about where we were afraid of something and then we had the conversation, the weight that lifts off.
The relief.
Whatever direction it went, it's just, you really never feel worse by having that conversation. And it's always not as bad as what we think it's going to be, right?
Right. Yeah. Because the mind is always catastrophizing and fearing and creating this wall of energy from that we are afraid. But we're typically in that scenario in a younger space. Like you're like 5 years old or 8 years old or often. And that's okay. Like we can work with that, you know, in therapy, you can work with that inner child, so to speak, like trusting again, because many of us have some deep wounds from our childhood that haven't really been dealt with. And that's keeping us stuck. We're in a very younger space at times. There's ways to work with that. Lots of ways to work with that.
Yeah. And the key is just setting the habits, setting the intentions to get better every day. And it's not black and white. Everybody has their own story, their own experiences. It's just these type of things are going to make you a better leader when you look at your workforce. You're going to make you a better parent, going to make you a better spouse, a better son, a better daughter. Just the little things. And that's where, for the listeners, just doing something is going to be the most important thing here. Do something. Get better every day. Find the right teacher. Find the right philosophy. Find what works for you. But if you don't do anything, it's that definition of insanity. It's going to be the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. So when you're saying what you're saying, it's making me think about something. It's like we all have been in a room and someone walks in and the energy changes. You feel their energy, right? So you become this better version of yourself when you have worked, think of your heart full of a lot of junk. That Hoover Dam is just blocking it, right? That is going to distract you from feeling the energy in the room. You're so distracted by the pain in your heart. The pain in the heart is the seed. And then the mind is all the weeds growing from that seed. So most people are just like trying to fix it at the level of the mind. But if you cut a weed, what happens? It comes back. The root is still here. So we need to take an elevator from our head to our heart and work at the root, okay? And that's when we've done that, then the heart becomes more open. And then when you're in the room, you're saying connecting with your family, your coworkers, you just feel into things, you sense into things. You're not thinking into things, you're sensing. You can feel that that person's off, or you connect more deeply. And this is where the creative process becomes magical. And that's what we're talking about. So I just want to give another way of understanding that we are energetic beings. We're picking up on energy all the time. That's not a woo-woo thing. People think it isn't. We all have been in someone's energy's heavy or someone's energy's uplifting. Maybe one of us have had that effect on someone today, you know? And so that is like our intuitive self. And we can just train ourselves to be more present in that by anchoring into the body, by connecting to breath, by doing heart healing work so we're not as distracted, by using mantra, all of these sorts of things.
Yeah, and it takes work, and it's not going to happen overnight. It takes work, but it's little steps, little baby steps, and all of a sudden you'll be getting into the routine of doing the meditation, which, you know, I've been pledging to myself to get to that, doing it religiously. But again, it doesn't have to be where you do it all at once. Just focus on each day, trying to get a little bit better, a little bit better, and you'll find your calling. So this has been awesome. Any last words as we end today? Beautiful. I knew it.
Yes.
Give it to me.
You know why? Because you just said baby steps. And I think this is a perfect way to end. Okay. When a baby's learning how to walk and they fall down, what do we do? Do we call them? There's a lot of perfectionists on here. Do we criticize them? Do we tell them they're failing? Do we tell them that they're like a loser because they fell down? No, but that's what we're doing when we have a perfectionistic mind, okay? Not good enough, not good enough. So we're still learning how to walk, guys. Every single one of us. We've never done this together, Andrew. We've never done a podcast together. We've never had this conversation. We're learning how to walk right now. And the day we die, to go back to that thing, we're going to learn how to die. That's what's going to happen. So every day for the rest of our lives, we're learning how to walk through that experience. And so having that compassion, having that understanding, we have this idea that, oh, I'm an adult. I've graduated from college, graduate school, whatever. And I should, to go back to that word, know how to do this all. It's like you've never done today before. You're still learning how to walk. So have that grace with yourself and others. And so that you can be more compassionate and able to let go of that hate, that critical mind that is keeping you from being in your abundant self.
Beautiful, beautiful words, beautiful way to end it. You've got me uplifted on this Monday. I'm ready to rock now.
Good.
Don't usually record on Mondays, and now I'm ready to get this week going. So I hope the listeners got that as well, the energy and just the abundance of gratitude that you bring each day to all your teaching. So
thank you.
Tremendous stuff. Appreciate what you're doing. We look forward to seeing what this next year brings for you and for you to be able to help more and more people. So thank you so much for joining us on the Your Wealth and Beyond podcast, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you.
All the show notes will be below the video, and happy planning, everybody. We'll see you real soon on a brand new episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. To get access to all the resources mentioned during today's podcast, please visit Baintree.com/podcast. And be sure to tune in later this month for another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond.
Investment advice is offered through Baintree Wealth Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuity products are offered separately through Baintree Planning Group, LLC. Baintree is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during this show shall constitute legal or tax advice. You should talk to a qualified professional before making any decisions about your personal situation.